Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Coming up on today's program, an update on a story from the election process. A pretty interesting situation. We'll give you the details on that. Also, your social media addiction could be making you depressed. If you've got an addiction, I guess. There's a paper about that. We'll have some details. Also, Muslim students are demanding prayer rooms in every major building on some college campuses. More details coming up. Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online. We're at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Thanks for spending some time with us today on this Thursday. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon is here today. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Also, if you'd like to send us any emails, please send those to comments@kpcg.fm. We like getting those from you. Grant, you're a sports fan. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Basketball fan? College basketball fan?
Not really.
Well, then never mind. Moving on. No. I do like college basketball, and Duke University is sort of a loved and or hated basketball program. People are kind of usually, they usually love them or hate them. They're kind of in that mold. And they've had this succession of players that have been villains, the villainous players. They all happen to be white for some reason. But,
that's true.
You go back, you got Christian Laettner, you got Bobby Hurley, you've got J.J. Redick, Danny Ferry, a bunch of guys. Grayson Allen, he's the new one. Last night he was playing a basketball game, and he tripped an opposing player for the third time in the last, I think it's 2 years.
I saw the video. I was actually just watching that.
It was pretty bad. An intentional trip. The guy made a nice little move on him, and he decided to trip him.
It's so, pretty impressive, actually, because he was doing a full spin and acted like he was falling down sideways and happened to stick out his leg, and then he kept spinning around.
That's the thing with video, though. They will catch you. And so he did it one time last year, and I remember people being like, oh, that's unsportsmanlike, and there was, you know, shouldn't do that. Okay, it was a one-off. Then he did it again. And it was like, okay, he's got to calm down. And then he did it a third time last night. So he's been suspended indefinitely by
his own coach.
By Duke. So some of the comments said they'll get him back in there as soon as the games matter once they get into the conference schedule.
Exactly.
There's no way to really defend that. That's just unsportsmanlike. You don't trip somebody.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of interesting that all of Duke's enemies are, or all of their villains are white guys.
They do
whatever it takes, it seems like.
Get under people's skin. And, of course, famously, years ago, there was a famous game in the NCAA tournaments between Duke and Kentucky. I believe it was in the tournament, where Christian Laettner stomped on a guy's chest and didn't get ejected. And then I think he had the game-winning shot if I got all my history together.
I think that's right.
They have kind of known, Duke is kind of known for getting all the calls and getting away with stuff. I don't know if that's true or not. They beat my Badgers a couple years ago. So I've got no love for him. But at the same time,
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. And Grayson Allen, he took it to us in that game. But yeah, he's tripping people. I don't know why would you do it? Why would you just keep tripping people? Like Draymond Green just keeps kicking people.
Well, he's already being compared to Draymond Green, and apparently that is a rather lucrative career path because Draymond Green is very wealthy now.
Well,
for kicking everybody, 6'7" men in the face, like he's a Rockette.
Maybe that's a post-basketball career, the Rockettes.
Yeah, exactly.
Grayson Allen, he can get drafted by Golden State Warriors, and they could just trip and kick
he'd
their way
right in
to the championship. Anyway, it's kind of weird deal. The video is out there if you want to see it, if you're a basketball fan. That's just dirty basketball. That's not good at all. So, unfortunate event. And the guy that he tripped, he had kind of an interesting name. What was his name? Steven Santa Anna. That's the guy's name. I had to read it like 10 times. I'm like, that's his real name? Steven Santa Anna?
Well, it looked like Santa and Anna weren't even connected, so Santa was almost like his middle name.
Yeah.
Just standalone.
Well, anyway, Grayson Allen tripped Steven Santa Anna. Sounds like a historical event, but anyway.
It sounds like the cause of a world war or something.
I wasn't sure I had that name right, so that was one of the sports stories last night. And you know what's so funny about it, too, is I happened to check the score last night just to see what was going on, and there was an article, and they must have published it earlier in the day, and it was a feature piece on Grayson Allen, and they said, you know, the maturing process of Grayson Allen. He's finally putting this behind him. And then right above the headline, he just trips a guy. I'm like, how did they time this? It's perfect. It was like The Onion, but I think it's just worked out that way.
Well, some guys just can't get over doing things like that. It's almost like if their opponent beats them on one play, they can't let it happen even one time. And so they do whatever it takes to stop him, even if it's cheating.
He must have gone to the Bill Laimbeer summer camp. Anybody remembers him from back in the day? He'd just trip you, push you, do whatever it took.
Yeah, it also reminds me of that guy, Ndamukong Suh, the football player who is always kicking people in the groin or stomping on them while they're on the ground, things like that. And then he comes across as really apologetic and like he's a changed man. And then he does it again like 3 weeks later.
Yeah, I would think, you know, a guy like, say, Grayson Allen or something, you know, he probably is sorry after the fact. But in the heat of the battle, he just trips guys.
Did you see his meltdown on the bench after that trip last night?
No, I didn't.
Just, I've never seen anything like the way he just freaked out.
Huh, maybe he just knew he did it again.
He probably knew it was in big trouble.
Yeah. Well, you might remember this story from back during the campaign season for the recent presidential election. Mississippi Black church fire was called a hate crime, but they found out now that somebody else did it. It was a Mississippi church. A member got burned, and they spray painted on the wall, "Vote Trump." And people just had a field day. You know, oh, white supremacists, KKK. And I remember when it happened, I thought, that's a little too obvious. That seems like, who knows who did it, but it seems like it's somebody trying to stir up trouble. And sure enough, 45-year-old Andrew McClinton got caught. He's a black guy that actually goes to that church. So kind of an interesting thing. They say that McClinton Church and law enforcement officials told the Associated Press that, you know, the guy McClinton is an African-American member of the burned church. According to authorities, the blaze was... But listen to this. They say, according to authorities, the blaze was not motivated by the presidential race. They say, we do not believe it was politically motivated. Who knows? I don't know why, but how could you say that? Well, they immediately came out on the other side and said, oh, this is a politically motivated thing, when they thought it was a white person that had done it. Now they find out it didn't go that way, and they're quickly saying, had nothing to do with politics, move on. You couldn't even find this story. I saw it as a little tiny blurb, checked the headlines today, it was completely gone. I had to search for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was front page news when it happened. Why not front page news now?
Right, it's the exact same action that just happened to be by someone of a different race, and then apparently it doesn't matter. There was no motive behind it. He may have just slipped up in his Christian walk momentarily and made this mistake.
So it just one of those things. There's been a few instances where things kind of come out like that where everyone jumps on board and says that it's some big racially motivated issue, and then it turns out it doesn't fit the narrative, and they quickly stop talking about it or dismiss it, like in this case, and say, well, we don't know why he did it, move on, nothing to see here.
And that just fits in with the media changing the definition of racism. That's happened as well, where only if you're in a position of power can you be a racist, and if you are disadvantaged or a minority, you can't be.
And I'm not sure why they're so quick to say it's not politically motivated. People have been asking, like, okay, you said this was a hate crime, so it's still a hate crime, right?
And Same thing.
I think they're backing off of that because I think they don't want to make it into that. So, which is always a weird thing to me, a hate crime. All crime is hate crime. You ever do a love crime? Quit doing those love crimes. I mean, it's just hate crime. But anyway, they have their definitions for it. So I thought that was interesting, and I barely caught just a little bit of it yesterday, and then I had a search to find it today because surprisingly it's not on the headlines. So
yeah, what do you know? It just fits in with everything we've seen recently. Really, it's almost like an all-out attack on white people.
Speaking of,
I don't feel sorry for myself though. No. It just is what it is.
This is a story here from Heat Street, my alma mater. I went to college in Wisconsin. Lawmakers take aim at Wisconsin's Problem of Whiteness course. They have a course called Problem of Whiteness. That sounds like a hate crime. The University of Wisconsin-Madison has come under fire for offering a spring semester class on the, quote, problem of whiteness. Wisconsin State Representative Dave Murphy, Republican, has called on the university to cancel the class and fire its professor, Damon Sajnani, the author of a series of tweets that critics say amount to an endorsement of anti-police violence. He's teaching a course on the problem of whiteness. You going to join that one?
His name doesn't sound white either,
No, he's not. He sent out some tweets during the murder of those Dallas police officers. And in one of them, he said something about, you know, is this the way the protest goes viral or something? And then he tweeted another one the same night those officers are killed. This guy, who apparently is a professor of some kind at the University of Wisconsin, his last name is Sajnani. He tweeted a link to the song Officer Down and wrote, "This is the song I am currently enjoying in my head." That was the night that the Dallas police officers were murdered. And this guy is a professor at the University of Wisconsin. For now, anyway, wow.
Is that what people have to do now to get a job like that at a university? Is just show a sort of anti-law, anti-rule attitude?
It's beyond bad taste. And it's just puzzling. I don't know anything about this individual other than the article. But what a weird place to have that class, too. There's a lot of white people in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it has I don't know what the breakdown is of the university is, but that's a tough class to, I think, get people to attend. It's not mandatory, so who knows?
Yeah, he really seems like he's putting himself in a risky position there to teach a class like that in a state full of so many white people. And also, it would have more credibility if at least he were white.
Well, yeah, I think the thing that they said was something to the effect of, well, this is going to help students learn to deal with race issues. No, it's not. It's gonna stir up hatred among people. I mean, that's he already has in these tweets that he sent out. So, yeah, really bizarre. It's like every time you think you've seen the weirdest thing at a college, something weirder happens.
Yeah, when do we see the times of greatest racial peace? It's when nothing about race has been mentioned in quite a while. The last 8 years, we've heard race mentioned constantly, and the race relations are far worse. Even though people might, in some cases, have pretty good intentions, it's not helping anything.
No, you can't have a class called Problem of Whiteness. You know, it's interesting too. I saw another headline today where I think it was O'Reilly on Fox, where he said apparently that the left wants to get rid of white rule, and he took some heat for saying that. But you see university classes like this. Well, what are you supposed to make of it? Like, what is your conclusion when you see universities offering classes like that? That seems to be what they are trying to do.
And you don't even have to read any further into the story to know that it's a leftist who is promoting a class like that, and it's a Republican who would be against it. It's just how it always is. And so anytime you hear something anti-white, it is coming from the left.
Really strange days indeed. I hope nobody takes that course. That'd be a real waste of money. Now, if it was on the, you know, the greatness of cheese in Wisconsin, you'd have a lot of people in there in that class. Yeah. Problem of whiteness, that one's not going to work.
Too divisive.
Yeah, people don't necessarily want to hear that, I don't think. You've talked before, Grant, about trying to get rid of social media for a while, going cold turkey. You feel like that's helped you at times?
Yes, I still don't have it back. So I don't miss it at all.
The New York Post has this story that they say your social media addiction is giving you depression. They talked about this one individual. His name is Jason Zook. He started every morning by scrolling through Twitter, Instagram, Vine, his blog, and Facebook. He sounds like an important person. It started to have an effect on the 33-year-old entrepreneur's mental health. The San Diego resident was stressed, distracted, and feeling like he could never fulfill the expectations he created in his digital world. where he amassed more than 33,000 followers. I think that's a problem that people run into. They're trying to, you know, have this image, and it's not realistic, and it drains their energies.
Well, yeah, it's the first thing he's doing every morning. That's clearly not the most important part of anyone's life, no matter what kind of life you're living. Social media should not be what you're most concerned about.
He tried to do something about it. He went cold turkey, got rid of it. He went for 30 days without social media, a social media detox. They say it was a smart move. A recent study from the University of Pittsburgh's Center for Research on Media Technology and Health found that using multiple social media platforms may put you at increased risk of depression and anxiety. I believe that could be true. You got to try to keep up with these appearances. The study found that people who use anywhere from 7 to 10 social media platforms, I didn't even know there were that many. There's a lot of them out there, and they keep adding more, are three times more likely to be depressed or anxious compared to those using no more than two. So you can keep your Twitter and Facebook, but no more. Got to cut it off somewhere. No more Instagram for you.
I'd get rid of Twitter and Facebook first because they're extremely pro-leftist right now. They're censoring voices that they don't like.
Yeah, they should change that class in Wisconsin from the problem of whiteness to the problem of Facebook. See how many people join that one. The problem of Twitter.
That's, actually, those are some pretty tough jobs being the censorship police, basically, because you're going to see a lot of filthy content on there that you have to get rid of. Not a fun line of work at all.
It would be depressing.
Oh yeah.
To look at all that, you know how it is. Sometimes you read a news story, you watch a video, and then you start reading the comments. And sometimes they're funny, but then they get nasty, and you just feel depressed after reading them. They're just negative.
And then any user could really feel the same way because if it hasn't been deleted yet, they could see everything as well.
Yeah. Well, and if your whole goal is to build up sort of this social presence, and you post something, and people are like, eh, they say something snarky about it, or you don't get a lot of likes. It starts messing with your head.
Yeah.
Get depressed. Get anxious. How come nobody likes my tweets?
Or you motivate people to one-up your tweets, and then you feel inferior once those better tweets come out.
Yeah. There's always people that you see sometimes on the same platforms always commenting on things. You see the same usernames pop up like on sports contests and stuff. And you're like, wow, that's what you do. Like you constantly just comment on this stuff. So of course,
always watching.
Yeah. Of course, I read them, so I guess I'm right there with them. It says, those who reported such symptoms having this anxiety or this depression were overwhelmed by the multitasking needed to manage their profiles. And the more profiles they had, the more the pressure added up. So they're spending their time in pursuits that I guess aren't that beneficial. Some people do need a little bit of a social media profile for their jobs and so forth, but some people probably take it too far. And they have a hard time with it. So they recommend not having as many social media platforms if you can stand it.
It's interesting because a lot of studies have been coming out about how children feel like every aspect of their entire lives are worse if they spend an hour a day on social media, except for their friendships. They think they're kind of artificially maintaining friendships that way, but every other part of their life, their fulfillment and other things have gone downhill.
Well, you know, the thing, one of the really bad things about some of the social media is it has opened up like this 24/7 path for bullying people. And I mean, sometimes I think people, cry about that maybe a little more than they should. But in some cases, it's pretty serious. And, usually back in my day, if you had a problem with somebody, you could kind of go home and you didn't deal with it till the next day. But here, if they're constantly attacking you on social media, you can't get away from it. So some of the stories I've read, it seems pretty nasty, and I do feel bad for the people involved in that.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge problem with social media is the bullying aspect. And a lot of people say, well, if you don't want to be bullied online, just stay off of it. But what about the addiction aspect of it? People are so addicted that even if they're getting bullied online, they still have to go see what's going on.
Well, yeah, I suppose you can go off the grid, but that's kind of hard. You do have to interact with people, and it's a bad deal. So anyway, there are some warnings there about too much of the social media. So of course this one's happening. Is too much sugar really that bad for you? People talk about sugar. Is it really that bad for you? Well, there's a new paper that says, hang on a second, we don't think it is. It's an industry-funded paper that says global recommendations on limiting sugar are based on weak evidence. Weak evidence. Of course, the paper was sponsored by members including Coca-Cola, Hershey, Red Bull, and Oreo cookies.
All my favorites.
So they have a little bit of interest in what this paper says, and they paid the people to write it about, I think, $25,000 apiece.
Wow.
And they said, we don't know that there's a lot of evidence that sugar causes problems, you know, except for the entire population. They didn't add that last part. But except for the skyrocketing obesity and the other diseases that we see. There's not a lot of evidence to go
on. So they advocate no limits on sugar at all?
No, well, they're just saying you can't. They're just saying they don't think there's enough evidence to say that it should be limited like they're recommending. You know, if they come out and say you should only have so much, they say, well, hang on, we don't know. We don't know how much you should have here. But obviously, it's because it's their profit. It's their money. So they're going to come out and pay. And that just shows you, you can pay researchers. They'll give you some research that you want. Lifetime supply of Oreos and Red Bull. That sounds like a bad day.
Well, maybe they think the possible obesity problem is worth it as long as you get that temporary sugar high, that feeling of being unstoppable.
It's all how you spin it, man. You know what? You could just say, hey, you show somebody working out really hard and being like, you know, powered by Oreos or something. They needed the sugar to get to the gym. That's why they're so fit. You know, you could spin it as a health thing.
Yeah, I mean, really, you could. There's always a positive to everything, I guess.
Why are they not paying me to write their stories for them?
$25,000.
I'll make something up.
You wouldn't be here tomorrow if they paid you $25,000.
That doesn't go as far as you think. I don't have the I don't have the PhD and all that behind my name to, you know, make it seem more legitimate.
Wouldn't be a very long term option.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't want to pay me for that. But I have all kinds of ideas out there. Last night we stopped by a Starbucks, my family and myself, as we were doing some errands, and somebody ordered a chai, and I told the lady behind the counter, I said, next time you put up your advertisements, because they advertise drinks, I said you should write, chai it, you'll like it. I didn't get a discount.
What did she think about that?
Thought it was funny. She laughed, but she didn't give me a discount. So I see it in that store, I'm going to get paid
for that.
Where's my $25,000? I had ideas here. So anyway, there's always some different reports that come out about sugar consumption, and you have to see who sponsored it to kind of get an idea of how accurate it could be. There's also a store out there. I don't write down the story, but where you can buy really expensive gifts, you know, for people that have everything. You say, I want to get you something nice. One of them is a gold and diamond encrusted iPhone with Donald Trump's face on it for like $200,000.
I think someone mentioned that to me yesterday.
Yeah.
He was asking, would you get a gold iPhone case? I'm like, what?
Well, yeah, it's so that's strange, obviously. He didn't order it. Mr. Trump didn't order it for himself. Somebody else ordered it, which is even weirder. And they're also selling a gold-plated bicycle. So just a regular bicycle, but it's all gold.
Wow.
You know, and you think about something like that, you'd never be able to use it. People would steal it or you'd lose it or, you know, that's quite an investment to make. But I guess if you got a ton of money, it doesn't matter.
It really wouldn't matter at all. I think that's something that people can spend money on, so why not at that point in their lives?
That always happens when they go into like the house of a really wealthy person, usually a dictator of some kind, and all the just ridiculous and opulent things that are in there, gold-plated toilets, things like that. And so anyway, if you've got just a ton of cash and you didn't spend all your money on the Iron Man suit. The Iron Man suit is kind of cool.
Yeah.
$325,000 or something,
$360,000, I think, something like
$360,000, yeah, somewhere in there. It's all chump change at this point. So those are some of the interesting things that are going on. There's a Kia David program's coming up today on KPCG, two programs. Make sure you listen for those. Archives are at kpcg.fm, and a new program coming out on Friday as well. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, again from Edmond, Oklahoma. I almost said Ed Stone. They have the same beginning. I almost blew it there. Edmond, Oklahoma, here, where we're broadcasting from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. And make sure you listen for that program coming up, a replay today. And you can check the schedule or you get the archives online at kpcg.fm. It's live at 7 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Lots going on in Germany. A lot happening there that he's discussing. They still haven't found the guy that committed that attack at the time of us doing this program. So It's just the longer that drags on, the worse Angela Merkel looks, the worse Germany looks.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one guy. They need to catch that guy because obviously he's going to commit more crimes whenever he gets the chance, going to kill more people. And not enough priorities being placed on protecting Germans.
And it's a really tough deal because they had him. He was in the system. They know, you know, they know who the guy is, and he just kept slipping through, you know, various ways. And that's always a difficulty. You know, if it comes out of nowhere and you didn't expect it, then it kind of is what it is. But when you already had the guy, that's the tough thing. You know, even 9/11 here, I saw a documentary on that and how many times they knew where those people were that were involved. They knew somewhat what they were up to. And they just never did anything about it. And then, of course, they slipped. They lost him for a moment. And when they lost him is when 9/11 happened.
Well, that's the tough thing about Western justice systems is that we're tracking these guys who could potentially be dangerous, who are in communication with Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. But we have to wait until they attempt an attack in most cases before we actually go and apprehend them. We can't just say, like, oh, they've been to these websites, so we can take them in.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because nobody would want like this ironclad police state. But at the same time, there is some danger there to an open society. You know, those 9/11 terrorists, they actually got pulled over here in Oklahoma for speeding. They were driving through, making their way out there. But, you know, you don't know what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. They're just some guys speeding. So it's interesting to see how some of those things happened. So a lot of that's talked about with Germany and what's going on there. That's on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and that's going to be here coming on here in a bit on KPCG. And again, you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link of thetrumpet.com as well. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm, and if you'd like to email us, send those comments to comments@kpcg.fm. The oldest known gorilla in the U.S. turns 60 today. So
was it 60 or 69?
60.
Just 60, okay.
60 from what I could, you know, the headline I have. Unless, you know, I didn't check the ID. It might be 69. The headline said 60.
I saw a headline, but it was really small print, okay. So I didn't see it very well.
If I pronounce his name correctly, it's Kolo.
Not Harambe.
No, not Harambe. Kolo. It's a female gorilla at the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. She celebrates her milestone today, Thursday. Kolo is the first gorilla in the world born in a zoo and has surpassed the usual life expectancy of captive gorillas by 2 decades. She just keeps living and living.
What's the secret here?
Yeah, what's the secret? Somebody needs to ask her, Kolo, what are you thinking? We got to get that reporter from that alligator attack. What are you thinking, Kolo? How do you do it?
Baldwin.
Yeah. How do you do it? How do you stay alive? Kolo, of course, would say Red Bull and Oreos, according to the new report that came out.
We should ask those zookeepers what they're doing. What are they feeding her, you know?
How does she live so long?
What kind of environment is it?
Yeah, it is interesting when some of those animals live a long, long time. Well, tortoises live a long time, right? They always look old. Mm-hmm. You never see a fresh-faced tortoise.
Can't they live hundreds of years?
Yeah, they live a long, long time. It's amazing the things that, if only the animals could talk, the things that they would tell us about there at the zoo, the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. Where was that Harambe out, that one that got killed?
I think that was in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
Somewhere in Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Kolo, anyway, 60 years old today, and the oldest known living gorilla in the U.S., somebody's probably got a pet gorilla somewhere that's about 65, but nobody knows about it. Keep it quiet, probably down in Texas somewhere. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondo here today. Hello, Abraham.
Hello.
You were cutting it close there on your timing.
Yes.
you got hung up, got detained.
It's, well, just fashionably late.
Oh, okay. You're big timing us.
Yes.
Okay. Let's pull your mic down a little bit. you've got a story from The Atlantic, the spiritual crisis of the modern economy. And the byline here says, the main source of meaning in American life is a meritocratic competition that makes those who struggle feel inferior. In case you're feeling inferior about not knowing what that word means, meritocratic is an elite group of people whose progress is based on ability and talent rather than on class, privilege, or wealth, a system in which such persons are rewarded and advanced. So people are feeling poorly because they're not as good as the guy next to them.
Right. Yeah, this is a really interesting article because it really does show a fundamental problem with American society. And it does come back to this, how we view merit. So that's what a meritocracy is. It's based on merit. So you pull your up by your pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You everything you earn, everything you make, everything you have is because you earned it. You worked hard for it. You educate yourself, and therefore you deserve it. That's what meritocracy is.
If you're in Berkeley, you pull yourself up by your Birkenstraps.
Yes,
same principle.
Yes, yeah.
And you wave your anti-Israel flags.
Yes,
that went sideways. but yeah, no, that is the way that the U.S. has been built traditionally. That you, if you work hard, you can get, you know, a lot of places depending on how skilled you are.
Yeah, exactly. So there's obviously, I think everyone enjoys merit compared to the choices of aristocracy or class privilege. And there is a mixture in the United States, but this article brings up a great point where in meritocracy, the only thing people have to look forward to is materialism. So the whole point of educating yourself, your self-value, is based off of the physical things you can attain. And the author here, Victor Tan Chen, he goes through a lot of great examples of people he was interviewing in the American middle class, white working class especially, and how over the past 8 years, they've lost their jobs, money, and better jobs are coming in cities where you need a higher education to qualify for those jobs. But in the flyover states, in the Midwest, in the industrial areas, you're having a lot of factories going overseas, decrease in wages. And so people are losing their houses. Their marriages are falling apart because they can't find jobs. Just a lot of terrible things are happening. And this all comes back to this idea of meritocracies that, well, I can't find a job. My wife left me or my husband left me. I live in a bad neighborhood now because I can't afford my mortgage. So what kind of person am I actually?
Yeah, I mean, it is. People's identities are often tied into how much money they have at the end of the day, especially in the Western society. And it is interesting, too, because you talk about, you know, people that lost a job and then they're not skilled or qualified or whatever for the other job that they might be looking at. But it's just a really interesting system when you look at it in general, because you've got these younger people coming through universities racking up debt that they may not pay off to then get plugged into those jobs, which sometimes maybe you make a fair bit, sometimes you don't. Even if you do okay, you're still paying back all this debt and you're just kind of on this treadmill. But it's interesting too, because you talk about, you know, this idea that it's based on merit, but people, especially young people, think that the merit is because I got a degree. And it can be that, but it's not. It doesn't necessarily mean you're qualified to do, you know, certain degrees don't give you a lot of qualifications, but people are looking for that approval from an established institution. And then if they don't have that, they feel like maybe they're not qualified. But that's not always a measure of somebody's abilities.
Yeah, exactly. That's a problem we're seeing, is that you have a lot of institutions, establishments, people who are highly educated, who do run the economy, who make important policy decisions. They're completely out of touch with those who don't think the same as them, who have a different background. And so a lot of the economic decisions and places where they hire just certain educated people who have a degree, they exclude a large part of the population who might be more qualified or who can bring different qualities in. One man exclaimed that work ethic and these other principles that used to be important aren't as important anymore. What people are looking for is a bachelor's degree or a graduate degree. I think that's a pretty fair criticism. Now, I think education is very important, but when you have a lot of politicians, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, pretty much all of them, they say, if you want social mobility, if you want to make yourself better, make your standard of living better, you have to educate yourself. But as we're seeing, that's not always the case. And sometimes people who don't have the opportunity to get educated, they're kind of being left behind. And that actually turns out to be a pretty big part of the middle class. There's a statistic where 2/3 of the American middle class do not have a bachelor's degree. So that's a pretty sizable portion of people.
Yeah, and I remember I had a boss that I, early on, one of my first jobs, and he had some really good points about it. And he said, you know, that the degree will get you in the door in some cases, you know, if it's between you and another person that doesn't have it. But then you kind of make your way, you know. But, you know, it's so interesting about this idea of, like, who's skilled or who's educated and so forth. Just take the media, for example. They're having all these lists coming out now about, like, the worst moments of 2016 with the media. Highly educated, I would assume. But there's such a disconnect between truth and reality and just common sense and some of the things you hear coming from those people. Are they educated? I guess they are. But in what? Daydreams? And, you know, so they're trying to push off their highbrow agenda in a lot of cases on people that are just trying to make, you know, the day in, day out mortgage payments and that type of thing. It's such a disconnect there. Are they really smarter? Are they really more, you know, do they have more abilities? Maybe, but they're not using them in a good way, that's for sure. If you just take the media as one example.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a glaringly huge problem from 2016 is you have the media just not doing their job or lying or just being disconnected from what's really going on. He makes, near the end of the article, he starts going into what the problem is. And I think he brings up a good point just with America in general is that over the past 70 years after World War II and America became more liberal, is that this meritocracy really took off. And so it replaced a lot of traditional values that Americans had and replaced them with materialism, looking for the next physical thing I need to buy to prove that I'm worth something. And it's this great quote from actually a liberal who was thinking of this problem, Michael Harrington. And this is what he says. We radicals have had mocked the old verities and preached a new freedom. Only our negatives were more powerful than our creativity. We propose that men and women find their purpose within themselves, that they disdain all the traditional crutches like God and the flag. But were we then to blame because many seem to have heard only that the old constraints had been abolished and ignored the call to find new obligations of their own? So in other words, he's saying we unleash this force where people don't have anything to believe in anymore, where they can easily become hopeless or go into this merciless competition of where can I get work? I need to compete with everyone around me to try to make a better life for myself. And so he's saying that when the left replaced people's beliefs from God or in America, in the old beliefs of the founding fathers, that we replace it with this materialistic goals that people have. And it's causing a lot of unhappiness and decay in the middle class. And I think that's getting along the line of a big problem in America, and that is people relying on themselves and people seeking materialism as the ultimate fulfillment of everything they have and everything that they are. And that's a big issue, especially when we come to the spiritual side of man, is how do you make the real person happy? Where do you look for true wealth? And who should you look to for blessings?
That ties in with a story we had earlier from the New York Post about the social media addiction giving people depression. Because a lot of that social media is to try to present like this great life. You know, if you happen to see somebody's account, they did this, they went there, they saw this, they bought this. You know, it's kind of on display. Not that everybody uses it that way, but it's used that way a lot. And again, it's trying to give yourself some sort of value in this social media world. And people are depressed by it because at the end of the day, does that define you? How many followers you have, or if you took a trip, or if you know, it really doesn't. And so that gnawing sense inside of man. Like, I want something more valuable. I want to be a valuable being. but if you're looking to the material stuff, which is easy to do, it's hollow at the end. you know, your car gets old, you get old. I mean, things happen. And so that's like the age old struggle, right? But it seems like it is more pronounced now because it seems like we're more materialistic now than we have been, at least in the past several hundred years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really the key to all this is when you have a meritocracy or people looking to themselves for the solutions or the other men and really seeking materialism as the ultimate fulfillment of this life, the American dream, the white picket fence, all those sorts of things, which are worthy goals. But when you replace that with the understanding of why America is blessed, why this land has certain laws, institutions, why they even have the chance to have an education. When you replace that with just pure materialism and really ingratitude to the one who gave it to us, that's the major spiritual flaw in the American economy, where it creates greed and selfish competition, lack of empathy to people who aren't as well off as you or don't have as many opportunities, all these different conflicts of interest between the classes in America. And that's really gets to the core of it, which is if people don't believe in God, but they believe in materialism, everything's going to fall apart.
You see that, especially if you look at like the industrialized food industry. You know, we were talking about earlier about the Coca-Cola and those companies funding this new report saying, oh, maybe sugar's not so bad. You know, they know that it's hurting people. A lot of the processes, a lot of the chemicals, a lot of the refinements, but they're making a buck. So at the end of the day, you're making a buck, but they don't eat it. And some, you know, if they're up at those higher levels, I don't think they're throwing back the Coke every day. Maybe they are. I don't know. But they know that it's not good for people. But at the end of the day, what matters? Making money. So it fits in perfectly to this crisis that we're talking about here, the spiritual crisis of the modern economy. Money first, everything else later. And it's a pretty shallow existence at the end.
So yeah. It would be better for people to believe in something, even if it wasn't God necessarily or the right religion. At least if they had some sort of inspiration in their lives, they wouldn't be just obsessed with money or the newest car.
That, you know, it's funny because you always, older people always kind of say the same basic thing. You know, they get to the end of their lives and they say, well, all that stuff didn't really matter. What mattered was, you know, the family or memories, things like that. And younger people always go, yeah, sure, sounds good. But it does go that way. But sometimes I guess you have to go through it before you really, really understand it. Now, granted, who wouldn't rather have a prosperous life? I mean, nobody wants to, you know, have an impoverished existence. But, you know, when you read like some historical accounts of how the nation was founded, whether it was the U.S. or things they did over in Britain, I mean, people really sacrificed. They did some really, really hard things for the betterment of the country and, you know, without a lot of return. Now, the generations later saw a lot of return, but they didn't. So different mentality there.
Yeah. I mean, meritocracy in itself is not a bad thing because I mean, that's what America was built on. People taking it upon themselves to do some amazing things, make some amazing sacrifices for the benefit of later generations. All those people who built the American West, everyone who, all the great entrepreneurs who created great businesses in America lived poor for a lot of their lives just to establish something that became great.
Yeah, that's a great example. Even like this area, Oklahoma, Panhandle, Dust Bowl time period, people really struggled. But they didn't want to move in a lot of cases. They wanted to stay put, even though it was very hard. They had their family. They had this was their land, and they wanted to stay there. And even though they weren't making a ton of money, and then, of course, today it's a little bit better, I guess. Still dusty. Built up a little more.
Yeah. But that's a great point that you mentioned is that a lot of people who really were prosperous, successful, or made sacrifices that we read about in history books and textbooks, they did believe in something more than materialism or what was around them, or else they wouldn't have stuck with it. And that gets to the point here is that people really need to believe in something bigger than themselves in order to get through the difficulties and to see past the competition and to find self-worth. It's something that is bigger than you. And I think if we do look to the past, we can find a lot of great examples of people who did find that. But also by their own merits in a certain capacity, were able to make their lives better because they did work hard. They did educate themselves and they did the best they could with what they were given.
Yeah. Competition's a hard game because you always lose. somewhere along the line. the article's from The Atlantic, The Spiritual Crisis of the Modern Economy. A really good book talking about the United States, the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. It's a free one at thetrumpet.com. It ties into how this nation was founded and established along with Britain. So you can get that at thetrumpet.com. Kind of tying into the education aspect there before we get to Grant's story. This is from CNBC.com. College students are borrowing way more than necessary. You don't say. They're borrowing all kinds of cash. They say it costs, if you're going to go to a private four-year college, you're going to spend $45,370 a year.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of cash. According to the College Board, in-state four-year public school, those costs were $20,000. But they're saying that people are just taking it all out on loans, and in a lot of cases, you can look for scholarships or federal grants of some kind of aid to help. And so people borrow too much, and then they don't look at all the places they could get some money. So if you're going to college and you're going to spend some bucks, you might want to think about that. Don't overborrow, because you've got to pay it back with interest.
And it sounds like they make loans extremely available on campuses. Like, you can go up to a small fold-up table, and it has pretty much a piece of paper to sign. You get a loan right there.
Professors are putting money in your pockets. No, it's not that. Here's your homework and $5,000. You'll need to pay that back, by the way. More craziness on college campuses. The cultural clashing continues. Grant, you have a story here from campusreform.org. Muslim students demand prayer rooms in every major building. Not the minor ones? which major buildings? They want prayer rooms. Just tell us about the story.
Okay. Well, some radical students at the University of Maryland have released a list of 64 demands to make the campus more favorable toward marginalized American Indian, Black, Latinx. How do you say that?
I don't know.
There's just an X attached to the word Latin. LGBTQIA, Muslim, pro-Palestine, and undocumented students. So they have a huge list of demands. Once again, we see students crying and stomping their feet and demanding more.
I noticed that they didn't include white students or Jewish students on that list.
Right.
That must have been an oversight.
No. This was very intentional. More Israel haters on campus. Big surprise. So, the Muslim students want a room in every major building, whatever that is, designated for prayer. They also want shuttle services to the local mosque so that they can have access to a place of worship.
Well, some people, whatever.
You know, it's a belief system, but If your belief system demands that you pray five times a day, then this is not the best society for that, because no systems here are set up for that.
Right, and the thing is that they, as far as I know, are free to do that. But the fact that they want someone to shuttle them around. I mean, we all have things that we would like to do. We don't have shuttles coming to our doors to take us, to Walmart or wherever we're going, unless you pay for it, I guess. So just 64 demands in total, huh? They feel like they're not getting a fair shake at the universities.
Well, I don't know. It just seems like it's a bit of the usual complaining. It's not like there's a whole lot of evidence of people being actively mistreated, but there are 25 student organizations on this campus, the University of Maryland, that have joined in. So some of the institutions are Students for Justice in Palestine, Bisexuals at Maryland, and the Black Student Union. So quite the groups to be involved in.
It's interesting, because the only thing they really have in common is they're against law and order usually, and white people, right? So or Jews. But they wouldn't agree even with each other. That all these groups, they have such different thinking. If you put them all together in a room and said, okay, well, go ahead and hash out a plan, and you take out hating white people or the establishment or whatever, they wouldn't agree on anything themselves.
Yeah, and there was a write-up about that on thetrumpet.com recently about why is the radical left and radical Muslims, why are they on the same side? And it's because they have a common enemy in Christians or conservatives. And as soon as those people are out of the way, they can just turn on each other. So for now, maybe they're allies, but it's not going to last.
Yeah, it's interesting because the whole mood, I guess, and temperature of the country here in the U.S. has actually been a lot more conservative than the media would have you believe. I mean, that's, or populist, mm-hmm. which you want to call it. But, you know, President-elect Trump gets in, and, you know, what he thinks personally, I don't know. I mean, he seems to be pretty liberal himself in a lot of ideas. But as much as I keep pushing for all these things, I think there's a much larger group that doesn't like any of this stuff, that silent majority they always talk about.
That's true. And there are a lot of different – these are just really – minority groups in terms of their numbers, not just in terms of what they identify as, but these people are minorities, but they're shouting the loudest. So it seems like they're the ones who have the majority opinion when they don't.
Yeah, it's so fascinating too that they would have a complaint that they want to have these prayer rooms, they want to be shuttled to mosques in the case of the Muslims. But then you also look at the people that would consider themselves to be Christian. And they are not allowed to pray, you know, before a football game or, you know, whatever. There's different things that people do. Not saying one thing or another about it, other than there's been a lot of media attention on that and people complaining about it and saying, hey, get your religion out of here. But then on the other hand, they're saying you must facilitate our worship. And if you were going to be equal and even about it, you'd say, okay, well, you can't do any of it. But it's not the way it goes.
Well, yeah, well, try going to a Arab nation that's Islamic and say, oh, I want prayer rooms for Christians in all your universities. It's not going to happen. Over there, I mean, they blast their prayers 5 times a day on the minarets, and that's fine. That's what they do in their country. But doesn't matter if it's infringing on your beliefs. They do it. We were digging when I was on the dig at the Ophel. They threw rocks at us. They urinated at us. They did all these things, and we were just digging old remains of the Ophel. We weren't doing anything that was, I mean, I can see why they would be upset about that, but we weren't actively doing anything against their religion. So if we're talking about justice and we're talking about equality, let's start looking at the nations that don't have the civil rights and everything America has, and let's talk about the rights of everyone in a collective way. Because even if they don't get the prayer rooms, the Muslims in America are way better off than a lot of them in Syria, where 15 million of them are living on the run. So I think there's some more things to be grateful for than demanding some pretty ridiculous things that a taxpayer will have to pay for.
What is like the expected college experience for people these days? Maybe go to class and then like protest and be angry and riot. And I don't know what percentage. I imagine most university students don't care anything about this. They go about their business. But you have those ones that they're just instigating constantly. How do they have time to go to class? They're always instigating.
Well, yeah, these students who are so desperate for prayer rooms, there are places in the world that would easily accommodate you. And so if you're desperate for that, you could go to those failed Arab states where you probably came from in the first place. So why did you leave those places for America if you want what is still back at home?
Yeah. Would the administration get in trouble if they just told them to pray about it? You want it? Well, pray about it. See what happens.
Well, there are some courses at universities that the whole point of the class is to get the students involved in protesting. I think at Stanford or at one, Stanford, Harvard, or Yale, one of the top three.
I would protest that class.
Yeah. Well, you should.
You should be allowed to, yeah. Right?
Yeah. There's a class that says... was it the visibility of Palestine or something like that? But basically, the point of the class is to inspire students to get involved in Palestinian, like protesting against Israeli occupation of Palestine.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of the class. That's an implicit politicization of a subject where you're actually getting students to be protesting as part of their grade in a university. I mean, that's... Other than there's a lot of classes that have that kind of activity. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
How can you imagine not doing well in that class? You know, you get like a C. They're like, you protested, but your heart wasn't in it. How can you get a bad grade? I had a class in college. It was a creative writing class, and we literally did nothing in there other than write whatever you felt like writing that day. And I think I got a B in it. And I was like, how can I get a B? There's no rules. I mean, I thought it was going to be an A. he didn't like my creative writing, I guess. But there was no assignment. The assignment was literally write something.
Ugh.
That was it. It could be one word. It could have been a novel. They didn't care. That was your assignment, and I got a B. I'm like, how can I get a B, though? So you take a class like, you know, protesting. How do you not get an A? You have to get an A, right?
Well, that's also part of this list of 64 demands at Maryland. They don't just have the prayer rooms on their list. They also want the administration to condemn equating pro-Palestinian activism with anti-Semitism. And it's funny because no Jewish student organizations there have signed in to help out these 25 groups that are trying to demand things from Maryland. So if they were so friendly toward the Jews, how come a single Jewish organization in Maryland hasn't gone their way?
Yeah, you know, people always do hope, I think, sincerely for peace. How can you have peace when you're educating the next generation to hate and to be divisive? That's all that it is. Mm-hmm. They're just teaching them to hate each other more and more and more.
Yeah, and a lot of these demands are just outrageous. They want to ban Columbus Day. They want to give more scholarships to students from marginalized communities. They want to begin every on-campus event with an acknowledgement that this is indigenous land. And they want all black professors to get tenure and have preferred pronouns included on class rosters. And they also want to require queer diversity training. A lot of crazy demands. And you're going to see how all of these anti-law radical leftist groups are basically joining forces to force their colleges to give them whatever they want.
Unbelievable. Bad time to go to Maryland. Yeah. Wow. There's almost nothing to say about it. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that leaves you speechless almost.
That is what is going on some college campuses. Crazy. Those are some of the things that are happening in the world. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turge, and Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.